The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I really appreciate you taking your time in the middle of the day to stop and say, let's go over and listen to Gary and see what we can learn today. I can assure you that what you've heard on the left and the right and NPR and all the other stations, you will not hear on this station. You will not hear on this program. And that's one of the reasons this is the most listened to program in the world for independent and progressive-minded individuals. I'm going to do a commentary today on the rising tide of barbarism, the prospects for society in decay, from Professor James Petras. I'm going to talk about Monsanto, the world's poster child for corruption, manipulation, and deceit. And yet, this is the same corporation that can walk right into the White House at any time and sit down with the President of the United States at any time it chooses and virtually control and manipulate national policy about food. But what about its background? Today I'm going to give everyone in this audience the talking points they need and scientific references to remind the legislators in Congress and the White House who these people really are. And once you've seen their background and how they've tried through PR spin to make themselves over again, you'll then say, wow, why would anyone want to go near anyone associated with this company, Monsanto. Also, time permitting, we live with ghosts and demons. Soldiers who took part in torture are now themselves suffering post-traumatic stress disorder. Oil spills, ecology, and the food chain. What the British Petroleum and the Coast Guard are not telling you about the truth about what's going on in the Gulf. Global warming, the latest on it. And Obama wants a Bush crony who is very, very ultra-conservative on drugs to head the Drug Enforcement Agency. Those are some of the issues I'll be dealing with. The latest always on health and healing. Let us begin. I'm working on a major feature film. Every day we have 8 people working in post-production on this. It's called Death by Medicine. Hopefully it'll be out in the next 4 weeks. And then I'll set a time for scheduling a premiere. In it, I talk about why so many people die. And in one of the introductions I did, I mentioned that there's a great deal of arrogance in medicine, that they are the wise ones. They know what's best. They know what you should have based upon the symptoms you manifest. If they were that wise, then why are they the number one cause of preventable death in the United States and injury each year in the United States? The figures go anywhere on the conservative sides from 600,000 to more realistically over 1 million that they kill. So if you kill 1 million people a year, that's more than 6 jumbo jets every day crashing and everyone on board dying. Not a word about it. Well, here's something that Johns Hopkins researchers have to say. Quote, arrogance of doctors is killing tens of thousands of patients. And this is published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Dr. Peter Provost, MD, PhD professor of anesthesiology and critical care medicine at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, although he works in the heart of mainstream academic and clinical medicine, he's taking an unusual and very heroic step in speaking out about medical errors. Tens of thousands of people are dying unnecessarily, he says, and one main reason involves enormous arrogance of many American doctors. In his commentary, he talks about the idea is that American physicians much of the time simply do not know how to approach their patients and he quotes doctors who are overconfident about the quality of care they provide or always believe things will go right and aren't prepared when they don't, and of hospital officials who fail to aggressively address problems like hospital-acquired infections where people die. In his JAMA paper, Dr. Provenhoofd points out that each year over 100,000 people die from healthcare-associated infections, just infections in hospitals. Another 98,000 die of other preventable mistakes, and tens of thousands more die from iatrogenic diagnostic errors and failure to achieve recommended therapies. By the way, his figures are way understated. We have the latest figures, and it's over 700,000 this year alone. But at least he is coming out and stating something, and because he is one of the chosen ones within medicine to say, let's take a look, that's good. So it's good that he's at least speaking up, because when mainstream doctors speak up, it's possible that other doctors will pay attention. Combined, vitamin C and vitamin E deficiencies increase your risk of heart disease, according to this scientific study published in Atherosclerosis, Thrombosis, and Vascular Biology. Now, what I am suggesting is that most Americans are unaware that when you drink alcohol, you destroy your vitamin C and you substantially limit vitamin E from being able to be beneficial to your body. You create massive inflammatory chemicals and free radicals. Hence, the person that is athletic, of which we have many people athletic, and especially younger people are athletic. They'll go to the gym, they'll work out vigorously, you'll see them in Central Park. But then at nighttime, they go to socialize, and they socialize by drinking a great deal without being aware that because their bodies are physically strong and well-sculpted and shaped, and they're not overweight, and they groom themselves, and they dress nice, and are very presentable physically, they're completely oblivious to the fact that their livers, their kidneys, their musculature, their brain and eyes are all being destroyed by oxidative stress and free radical inflammatory response from the alcohol. Now, what we have today in America, we have tens of millions of Americans suffering from subclinical vitamin C deficiencies, meaning you don't have scurvy, classical vitamin C deficiency. You have subclinical deficiency, meaning you are way below where your body needs to be to protect it, and yet you have just enough that you're not classical. And that's where you age prematurely. Now, here's the bad part of this. When you're younger, let's say in your 20s, and you're exercising, and you don't gain weight, you stay at a good weight, you don't think anything's wrong because externally you look so good and because you feel good. But you're prematurely aging your cells internally, a process that you can't feel and you can't see. So let's say that you're 30 and you've been drinking socially, not to get drunk, just social drinking. By the time you're 30 chronological, you're biologically 60. You're double at the biological level because of what you've done. There's a story that you may have heard me mention. It's a man that used to run in Central Park, and he ran the same pace, 6 minutes per mile, 13 miles every morning, 7 mornings a week. And we would run with him sometimes, some of the guys in our club. We generally trained faster than that because we were racing. So we'd train at a 5 minute, 4:50 to 5:30 pace. But there'd be times when we'd go slower and we'd be training with him. He worked on Wall Street. He was a very nice guy. And I asked him, I said, I never see you race. He said, oh, I don't race. I said, then why do you do 13 miles? You're overtrained. If you did 3 miles at a 6 minute pace, that's all your body would be required to maintain musculoskeletal fitness, hormone balance, a good blood pressure, good cholesterol, training more, you're actually breaking down the body. He said, well, that's not possible. Now, at that time, he was 32 years old. And I said, look at it a different way. You are watching your life as a film, but you put it in fast motion, so you're going very fast. And he said, I don't feel it. He said, every day I wake up and I just feel great. Okay. I said, but understand your cells are speeding up their cell division, mitosis. So your cells are not living the 2.5, let's say, a series of cells living 2.5 years, 50 divisions, which would allow you to live 150 years. He just couldn't wrap his mind around it because he didn't see it, he didn't feel it, no one was talking about it. Jump ahead 10 years. I'm walking down Broadway. And there he comes up to me. He's scary. He says, hey, he says, I haven't seen you in a while. I haven't seen you in the park. He says, oh, no, I can't go out running anymore. I said, why not? He said, oh, my legs are shot. And he said, I should have listened to you. He said, about another 3 years, and my body started to break down. And then I'd get infections, and I'd be fatigued. And he said, finally, I just had to give it up and take a break. And what was interesting, when I was looking in his face really looked wrinkled, lined, gaunt, and at that point he would only been about 42, 43. He had literally, he looked 70. That's a lesson. If you cheat at any point in any way with your diet, you will think you got away with it. You get away with nothing in life because you just don't know the level of sensitivity inside the body. A hamburger, French fries, barbecued ribs, potato chips, you pay for that. You just don't realize when the payment is due. Might be 5 years, might be 10 years. Bill Clinton, it was 40 years, but he finally paid for it. Look at him today. He looks ancient because biologically he is. And he's doing nothing to reverse it. He hasn't learned a lesson about anything on any level. So just be aware that millions are walking around with deficiencies of vitamins because alcohol destroys all your vitamin C, your B complex, zinc, caffeine gets rid of calcium. So those who drink coffee are more susceptible to osteoporosis, lack of hydrochloric acid, and infections. Simple things. So just pay attention to taking your supplements, not cheating. Industry paid studies likely to favor company drug. This is something you know because we've been talking about it. And here's what it says. This is from Reuters. When drug makers fund studies, when they pay for them out of their own pockets, the results are much more likely to be positive than when the government pays for it or independent researchers pay for it, of course. That's because they can't manipulate the statistics. This was just published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. Time and time again, I have seen where if the drug companies, it's almost inevitable. If I see a study that shows that that vitamin C causes cancer, always that's going to be a biased study because there's 30,000 studies showing that it doesn't and that it does all these positive things. So you know there's an agenda. You just don't know where. You have to look and dig through it. Or if you see a miracle drug, a chemotherapy agent. I pointed out yesterday on the program, there are no miracle drugs in the war on AIDS, except what Luc Montagnier said in a revelation yesterday on this program, that you could eliminate HIV from the body by taking antioxidants to a good diet. He said that twice in the same 3 minutes. You heard it first on this program yesterday. This is the man that won the Nobel Prize. I can assure you that today he is probably flooded with people from the pharmaceutical industry telling him, do you realize what you just said? Why would anyone take these toxic drugs that we've been selling them and make hundreds of billions of dollars off of? You know, watch where your research comes from. he's going to get a smackdown, a big one. Now, maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he felt it was time that he tell the truth. Good for him. Glad to see he did it. But almost always when drug companies tell you there's some miracle, there's not. And I gave you specific citations of all these drugs that all these people who are taking all these medications in the United States and Africa for AIDS are all getting sick and dying from. They're dying and getting sick from the drugs. They could get well from a healthy lifestyle. But they have the American media in their pocket. They own the New York Times. They own them. And ask someone from the New York Times, ask the publisher to come on the show and debate me on this. And I'll prove that the New York Times is controlled by the pharmaceutical industry. I'll prove it. So you have a challenge. Please accept the challenge. No one should trust anything said about anything involving health from the New York Times. They are utterly a compromised source, just like Fox. Do you really believe anything you hear on read on Fox when it comes to these issues? No. That doesn't mean that everyone's a liar over there. It doesn't mean that they don't present some information that's valid. But on policies that involve ideology, the ideology dictates their position, not the truth. Internet addicts more likely to develop depression. Wonder why. This is from Sydney University of Notre Dame School of Medicine. They said teenagers who spend excessive amounts of time on the internet. Is there any teenager who doesn't? You know, geez. Are 1.5 times, that's 150% more likely to develop depression. Will they know when they're depressed? I don't think so. The moderate web users. Oh, yeah. Well, gee whiz. And what value do they get out of most of what they're looking at over the internet? It's just, it's not as if they're using it as a tool, which they could for learning. And growth, but rather for amusement, entertainment, and diversion. Brains that are relaxed. Some people's brains are too relaxed. There's no grooves in their brains. There's just pure smoothness of some brains. We need to get some wrinkles in those brains, showing you're thinking. Brains that are relaxed are able to learn and remember better. This is from Nature magazine. I'll quote this, brains that in a state of relaxation are better able to remember new information, according to the study conducted at California Institute of Technology. All right, well, it's simple. When you're fearful, when you're anxious, you're constricting. Watch someone who is fearful and upset. Their whole musculature constricts. But when you're relaxed and you're at ease, there's greater blood flow to the brain. Therefore, with better nutrients and blood flow and oxygenation, then the cells of the brain are better nourished. Also, when you're more relaxed, you're not trying to figure something out under stress. You're allowing thoughts to come to you at a more normal pace. So more relaxed is always better. And finally, niacin is good for cholesterol. And we have a lot of people with elevated cholesterol in our country. Niacin is called the flush vitamin. It's actually it's vitamin B3, and it's also called nicotinic acid. And what happens is that in 100 to 200 milligrams, just up until flushing, it really increases circulation. It's very good for you. It's very good for people suffering from depression, anxiety, and poor circulation. One last thing here. Eat walnuts daily and improve cholesterol profiles also, especially if you have diabetes, because most diabetes, type 2 diabetics, have elevated cholesterol because they're also overweight and their liver isn't functioning because they've been eating too many refined carbohydrates, which causes problem with insulin sensitivity. So therefore, a handful of walnuts will improve your cholesterol profile. This is from Yale University School of Medicine. Says, quote, research team found that endothelial function, that's the lining of the arteries, significantly improved when people consumed the walnuts-enriched diet for 8 weeks compared to those that didn't eat the walnuts. So a handful of walnuts is good for your heart, good for your arteries, and good for your cholesterol. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Noll, and this is the number one listened to radio program for independent minds that are using their gray matter. And progressive voices, people who have something to say, and we have a forum for them to share it. I'm going to be taking calls in this hour. Our guest was not able to make it. We're rescheduling. I have a guest at our 3 o'clock show that you'll find interesting. So I've invited Carol Lee in to take issues from people in the audience, and she'll be sharing those with us in just a moment, and then we'll take your calls. But before we go there, a commentary is promised. And tonight, if you live on the East Coast, starting at 3 a.m., if you live on the West Coast, starting at midnight, 6 hours, 25 years, every Wednesday, 6-hour program. It's a different program. I do a lot of commentaries. I do a lot of calls with people in the audience. And people from all over the world are listening in. Over 50% of our audience are listening in. And this morning, Roy of Hollywood sent me KPFK's rating showing that, and I think you got them, Carol, also, that once again, number one in non-commercial radio of people listening live over the internet, 3 a.m., when normally no one's listening. We got a lot of people listening, so I think that one out there, oh, I saw one chart of 8,000. So we're very pleased about that. So don't forget to tune in. If you get up in the morning early, tune on, and you can go to GaryNoll.com, see the connection. Western societies, and by the way, you can watch today's program if you choose by going to Progressive Radio Network or GaryNoll.com. Western societies and states are moving towards what I personally believe are different forms of a barbaric structure. Structural changes are reversing decades of social welfare and subjecting labor, natural resources, and the wealth of nations to raw exploitation and pillage and plunder, driving living standards downwards and provoking unprecedented levels of discontent, all the while choosing not to give forms to those who have been living in discontent, have been losing quality of life, are frequently under enormous pain because they're having to support families with very little income. Now, I'll proceed by outlining the economic, political, military processes driving this process of decay and decomposition, and follow with an account of the mass popular responses to their deteriorating conditions. The deep structural changes accompanying the rise of this state become the basis for considering the prospects of what's going to be happening in the future. Now, in ancient society, we had what were called barbarians. They were envisioned as threats by outside invaders from outlying regions descending on Rome and Athens. In contemporary Western societies, the barbarians came from within. Who were they? Your local militia? No. Your patriot groups? No. How about your civil libertarians? Absolutely not. Well, how about members of the left, even the far left? No. Members of the right, the far right? No. Well, that's who we've been told are the barbarians. No, we had it wrong. The barbarians are the elite of society, and they are intent upon imposing a new order which destroys the social fabric and productive base of society, converting stable livelihoods into insecure, deteriorating conditions for daily life. The key to contemporary barbaric behavior is found in the deep structures of an imperial state and economy. These include the ascendancy of a financial speculative elite, which has pillaged trillions of dollars from savers, investors, mortgage carriers, consumers, and the state, siphoning enormous resources from the productive economy into the hands of a parasitic elite embedded in the state and paper economy. The militaristic political elite overseeing a state of permanent warfare that both the Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals, have supported. And they cannot lie, because every single appropriations bill to either feed the militaristic state or expand it, they have voted for it. It has passed. There's been no mass rallies, no mass protest in New York, in Washington, Los Angeles, unless I missed it, where the people in liberal radio got up and said to their audience, please join me while we protest taking money from Americans who need it by increasing their take-home pay, helping them with their unemployment benefits, giving them single-payer health insurance, helping the middle class, helping the poor, stopping home foreclosure, stopping repossession, stopping the rape of our land. Help these people first. Do not send these dollars overseas to corrupt regimes. Maybe I just missed it, however. Maybe that protest occurred, where 2, 3, 5, 10 million Americans got together and said, no more war. But no, I didn't miss it. It didn't happen. Because we have become, on the left and the right, enamored by personality, irrespective of how little substance there is to character. In the midst of this deep economic recession and stagnation, high levels of state spending on economic and military empire building at the expense of domestic economy and living standards. And that reflects subordination of the local economy to the activities of the imperial state. Corruption at the top in all aspects. Every single department of government is corrupt in their business activities, from state procurement to privatization to subsidies for the super rich. Encourages the growth of international crime from the top down. The whole idea of a super class and a state where law and order no longer exist to challenge them. As a result of the high cost of empire building and the pillage by the financial oligarchy, the socioeconomic burden has been placed directly on the shoulders of wage and salaried workers, pensioners, and the self-employed, resulting in long-term, large-scale downward mobility. With job losses that are not coming back, these same hypocrites will stand up in Congress and say that we should do something with stimulus. At the same time, they're taking money from the multi-level, multinational corporations to close down factories in every state in the country and ship those jobs off to other countries. It is palpable how hypocritical these people are. With the disappearance of well-paying jobs, home foreclosure skyrocketing, the stable middle and working classes shrinking, and they're all forced to extend their hours of labor and years of work at less pay. As imperial wars spread across the world, targeting entire populations via sustained bombings and clandestine terror operations, they generate opposing terrorist networks, which also target civilians and markets and transport and public spaces. The world resembles a Hobbesian world of all against all. Rising ethno-religious extremism linked to militarism is found among Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindus. I trust none, because I have seen the most radical elements within each, and I have not seen the moderate and progressive within any stand up and aggressively challenge those, with rare exception. And interestingly enough, one of those exceptions is in Israel. You have more people in Israel fighting for true peace than you have in America. rising ethno-religious extremism is not an exception. The demise of European and Asian welfare collectivism in the ex-USSR in China has lifted the competitive pressures on Western capitalism and encouraged them to revoke all the welfare concessions conceded to labor in the post-World War II period. The demise of that whole system and the integration of social democracy into the capitalist system have led to a severe weakening of the left, which the sporadic protests, the social movements, mainly over immigration, but on little else, have failed to replace. In the face of the current large-scale assault on workers' and middle-class living standards, there are only sporadic protests at best and political impotence at worst. Massive exploitation of labor in post-revolutionary capitalist societies like China and Vietnam includes the exclusion of hundreds of millions of migrant workers from elementary public education and health services, the unprecedented pillage and seizure by domestic oligarchs and foreign multinationals of thousands of lucrative strategic public enterprises in Russia, the ex-Soviet republics in Eastern Europe and the Balkans and the Baltic countries, was the greatest transfer of public to private wealth in the shortest time in history. If you were a member of organized crime in Russia, you went from being an organized crime person in Kiev or maybe in St. Petersburg to suddenly being an oligarch owning oil industries or owning gas industries, always as long as you knew who you had to give the kicks back to, Putin and all the people around him. We have never seen that kind of exploitation. And who was the primary economic architect of that? Larry Summers of Harvard. And what did it mean? A few got rich and everyone else went into depression and poverty. In summary, the barbaric today have emerged as a defining reality, product of the ascendancy of a militaristic and parasitic financial ruling class. The barbarians are here and now, present within the frontiers of Western societies and states. They are dominant and aggressively pursuing an agenda which is continually reducing living standards, transferring public wealth to the private bank accounts, pillaging public services and resources, savaging constitutional rights in their pursuit of imperial wars. Maybe again I missed it. Maybe I thought that someone who was a constitutional professor of law for 12 years at Chicago University would understand that if you take away habeas corpus, you've just stuck a dagger into the heart of the Constitution. It was interesting when I was down on at the Independence Mall filming a group of protesters, and I took the time to go in and look at the old documents. How few people even understand what these documents mean to us today and why we should honor them. Certainly not the president. He cannot feign ignorance since he is a constitutional scholar. They are dominant and aggressively pursuing an agenda which is continuously costing us, the individuals, more and more of our freedoms. And all the while, disintegration and diminution of the stable and middle class. More than at any time in recent history, the top 1% of the population controls an increasing share of the national wealth and income. The sustained large scale rollback of social rights and welfare provisions and wages and job security and pensions and salaries demonstrates the falsity of the idea of the linear progress of our current economic model. It never did work for the average person. It was a myth all along. The second false assumption is that states based on market economies require peace, and the corollary that markets trump militarism is disproven by the fact that the premier market economy, the United States, has been in a constant state of war since the early 1940s, actively engaged in wars on four continents to the present day, with no bigger and bloodier wars on the horizon. There will be. The cause and consequence of permanent warfare is the growth of a monstrous national security state. We have so many people that are getting massive contracts, massive, unimaginable amounts of money, all in secret, to spy on Americans. And they have the power to arrest, torture, or kill any American they deem a threat. And it's their call. They could indict a ham sandwich and get away with it. In any case, the third myth of advanced mature capitalism is that it constantly revolutionizes production through innovation and technology. Well, with the rise of the militaristic financial speculative elite, productive forces have been pillaged, and the so-called innovation is largely in the elaboration of financial instruments which exploit investors, strip assets, and wipe out productive employment. It's not by accident that there was a time when you could go into any town and city and borough in the United States and find Americans working in local companies, taking home that salary and proud and happy to be there and being able to raise a family because they had enough disposable income and protections, they had a quality of life. Show me that today. Show me the safe town to live in today. Show me the place where you have a wonderful employment and safety. Show me that today. I travel a lot. I see the truth. Too bad the people in the media don't get out. And then there is, of course, as empire grows, the domestic economy diminishes. Power is centralized in the executive, the legislative powers, and we, the citizens, are denied effective representation or even a veto via electoral processes. The rise of the barbaric in our midst has provoked public revulsion against its principled practitioners. Every survey I can find shows the following. We, the American people, excluding the Democrats and Republicans, we who actually have something left in our conscience and are not just a bunch of robots, we have profound disgust and revulsion against all political parties. We are a huge majority, and we harbor profound distrust of the corporate and political elite. We, the majority, reject the concentration of corporate power and the abuse of that power, especially among bankers and financiers. We know where the crimes are being perpetrated. There's a widespread questioning of the democratic credentials of political leaders who act at the behest of the corporate elite and promote the repressive policies of the national security state. A large majority reject the pillage of the state treasury to bail out banks and financial elite while imposing regressive austerity programs on the working middle class. In conclusion, this current system, this hybrid system, has certainly had a major impact on the objective and subjective conditions of the working middle classes, increasing impoverishment and provoking a rising tide of personal discontent, but not yet massive anti-government movements or even dynamic organized resistance. Many structural changes require a coming to terms with the current adverse circumstances and the identification of the new agencies and modes of class struggle and transformation. One key problem is the need to create a productive economy and to reconstruct a new industrial working class in the face of years of financial plunder and deindustrialization. Not necessarily the dirty industries of the past, coal and steel and automotive, but certainly new industries. My suggestion, new industries based upon real clean energy, honest energy, not coal and not electricity and not the solar, but rather solar, wind, and geothermal, yes, and small industries in every town in America. Second, the highly indebted society that we are today requires a fundamental shift from a high-cost militarism and empire-building to a kind of austerity that imposes sacrifice and structural reforms on the banking, financial, and big retail commercial sector, substituting local production for cheap consumer goods. You should not buy a dress, a hat, a shoe, a basketball, a car that is not made in the United States. That is your responsibility. Buy locally. Support American production. Otherwise, you are a total hypocrite. Don't voice your complaints if you're not willing to make some sacrifices. And since when is it a sacrifice to buy a quality-made product done right here in the United States? And lastly, downsize the financial and retail sector requires the upgrading of skills of the displaced workers and employees, as well as shifts in the IT sector to accommodate the shifts in the economy. The paradigmatic shifts from the money wage to the social wage, in which free public education is the highest level and universal health care and comprehensive pensions replace debt-financed consumerism. This can become the basis for strengthening the consciousness of all Americans. The question is, how do we move from weakened, fragmented labor and social movements in retreat or on the defensive to a position capable of launching an honest offensive against those in power? I will discuss that on upcoming programs. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. Every day I will be doing one or more commentaries. This afternoon I will also do a commentary on Monsanto. Won't want to miss that. Plus we'll have our guest. Now we go into a studio in New York City. Standing by is our program director, Kara Lee. Kara Lee, how are you?
Good. Thanks, Gary. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm always...
always good.
Always good.
Great.
I just don't personalize everything. See, deal with issues, don't personalize the issue. Don't become the problem you talk about, nor the energy around it.
Oh, well, I'll start off with this little story then, Gary. Did you hear about the new sponsorship for the American Dietetics Association, the ADA?
What is it?
They are going to be partnering with Hershey's.
Hershey's chocolate?
Chocolatey.
The American Dietetic Association now is going to, because their partners are also partners in creating policy, food policy. You're aware of that, right?
Makes sense.
Okay, so that makes a great deal of sense. You get a junk food, sugar, candy maker to create health policy for Americans. Is there something wrong with that?
Well, it sounds like that's the current policy right now.
See, that's the trouble. I saw that when I was in dietetic school. I am a licensed dietitian. And I got thrown out of the class 12 times, sent down to the president's office. They didn't want me in their class. Teachers actually said, we won't teach the class if Gary comes back in. I was not rude. I was never disruptive. I would just raise my hand and ask a question. Example, why is it that that Americans that have this pyramid group, you've never looked at the science and never showed the citations behind the pyramid group? You know, the basic, you know, you should eat your basic four.
Oh, okay.
I said, because I asked the professor, I said, you're asking us to read this, and when I looked at the research, I didn't find any research supporting it. He didn't like that. So, get out of my class. They expect you just to sit there and be sponges of information, to have no critical judgment. And that's not me. Anyhow, the dietitian would be the last person I would ever trust of anyone to tell me what a healthy diet is. And I would never trust the American Dietetic Association to give me objective, honest information. So it's no surprise they're taking money from Hershey chocolates. You know, why should that surprise me?
Yeah, well, okay. There you go. There you have it.
Well, before we go to your next question, I'm going to also take some calls. And if people in the audience would like to ask questions or make statements, please feel free to do so at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm going to get some of them in also. A quick little mention. I didn't have time earlier in the season when I wanted to do a little retreat. Once a year I do one. And my schedule is, next week we're filming in India. We're filming Dr. Shiva in India. And that's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be filming in Calcutta, Bombay, and the farmers, and all about organic, and the Hindu, which are 900 million Hindus, and they're vegetarian. And for the film on vegetarian, I'm doing. Anyhow, I'm and then I got to go out to Sedona. So it's a busy time right now. But I'm taking 1 week, the last full week of August, to do my annual detox, energy healing, rebalancing with 20 of the listeners down in Florida. If people would like to be considered, because I can't take more than 20, and you know, really be able to have people de-stress, detoxify, rebalance, learn, energize, stimulate the whole mind-body healing process. 20 people, you can call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And someone will get back in touch with you. All right? That's all I'm going to mention on that. Next question.
Sure, Gary. Well, this next little article I found is about the Denmark killing practices. Are you familiar with the killing spree of dolphins in Denmark?
They're still doing that.
Apparently so. We just got an email from a listener earlier today about it.
This is unlike the Japanese, who do it for some stupid reasons, based upon, well, you know, it's a tradition of this village. There, they do it as a rite of passage, where young men go into the water and hack to death and beat to death dolphins, baby dolphins, mother dolphins. And you see the dolphins, you know, trying to get away, and they can't. And the men are, you know, they're rejoicing in this ritual slaughter. I believe that this is something that must be understood in relationship to the mindset of the people in the country, because you should have had this stopped by law and outraged. And I'm sure that there are people in Denmark who are outraged by this, because if you believe that you're going to be a man by killing an innocent, intelligent, sensitive dolphin, what then will you do as an adult? So what you should do is just boycott everything from Denmark.
And the dolphins all go to waste?
Yeah, they don't care about the dolphins. It's just a sea of blood when you... I've seen so many pictures of that. I'd hope they stop that, but evidently they're not yet evolved enough as a culture to stop the... Well, just put it this way. What if we allowed everyone in America, every young man in America, to go to Central Park once a year and kill all the puppies? Thousands and thousands of puppies. And then they could come out feeling like a real man. What would that say about us as a country? Us as a people? We. So if the Danish people are not able to stop this, it tells me a great deal about them, not the idiots who are doing this.
Thanks, Gary.
Okay, next.
Well, this one is about the Gulf oil flow. It was 12 times more, they just found out, than the government initially estimated. Did you hear about this?
No, I just realized tonight on my overnight show, I'm going to do a whole comprehensive discussion and commentary on chemtrails. Chemical trails?
Chemical trails of the oil spill?
No, in the air. It's been going on for over 50 years. I'm going to do a commentary on chemtrails tonight. Okay, we have known all along that it wasn't 5,000 barrels a day. Now we know it was a minimum of 65,000 barrels a day or more. Some say it's as high as 100,000 barrels. But this was to be expected. They weren't going to tell us the truth, because they would be held financially responsible for how much oil actually got into the Gulf. They've also tried to let us believe that they're going to get over this real quick. Don't believe that for a heartbeat. The pollution is going to be there for decades to come, and they will try to downplay it. The trouble is, America's conscience is so short, our focus, just like with Haiti, that and I'll be down in Haiti shortly also, that 2 weeks after this is out of the news cycle, it'll be forgotten. except by those people who live down there who have been affected directly by it, and people, environmentalists and others, who care about it. But for the average American, on to the next crisis, on to the next disaster. I'm going to say goodbye to our WMYE audience. Thank you very much for listening, and you can continue listening over the Progressive Radio Network. So anything British Petroleum says, do not accept it as a fact until it can be independently proven.
Of course. Thanks, Gary. And this next one I think you'll find amusing, and one of those ways that's having to do with the financial system. And Timothy Geithner is now assuring the banks not to fear the financial reform. He came all the way up to New York City to address them and let them know that the new financial regulations are a good thing for business.
That's one of those moments where you wonder who in the media decided to see how disingenuous they could be. The banks wrote the reform bill. Geithner was merely the person coming in to announce it officially yesterday. You have nothing to fear because we didn't impact your trading in exotic derivatives. You can do as much of the loans in fractionalized reserve as you want. If you want to take in $1 and give out $100, you can. If you want to continue buying corporations and stacking an enormous amount of debt and taking what you stack on as your profit, leaving the corporation to struggle and finally collapse, go ahead. We haven't done any reform. If you want to make massive money trading in commodities essential to life without any care about who will suffer if you manipulate oil or water or food and it causes starvation and people to die, don't worry, because Obama's in your court. He's going to make sure that you make your money and no one will ever be able to touch how much money you make. There is no cap on salaries, no caps on bonuses. There's no requirement to show anyone how much toxic debt you have on your books. You do not have to show how much paper you're holding in credit default swaps. We're not reinstating the Glass-Steagall Act. They wrote all that. You can charge whatever you want in late fees and penalties on credit cards. You don't have to keep a person in their home and renegotiate their mortgage. They wrote that. They wrote the rules. They bought the whole process. It was a fixed game from the beginning. And it's embarrassing when you hear these talking head idiots on these economic shows speaking as if they know what they're talking about. They don't. At no time, at any time, was there any threat to the unbridled casino capitalism that was going on in the gaming of the system. Not one of those Wall Street firms will create new businesses in small communities or help the small business person who needs a break. Not one of them will help realign the price of your real estate with a market. So let's say you bought a house at $500,000 and today it's worth $200,000. Bring down the cost of your mortgage to $200,000. All right? So you're not underwater. Reset those high double set interest down to 3%. They could do that. It's voluntary. They chose not to do it in a single case in the United States. So on the one hand, you have only the bankers being bailed out and the American people just getting their asses kicked. and you don't have a single one of those creepy little degenerate politicians coming out to help them. It's a disgrace. Let's take one call here. I see we have a call. Let's say hello to Carolina from New York. How are you doing there?
Hello?
You're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to know. You spoke about raspberries yesterday. Was it black raspberries?
No, yes. I was talking about blackberries. Blackberries, not raspberries. Okay.
Thank you. And what is the rind of the oranges or grapefruits? Are they good? What is the specific use can they be used for? Do you know?
Well, they have a chemical in them called limonene, and that's anti-cancer. It's very powerful at removing parasites from the intestines, and it's very healing. So, yes, it's good But you have to juice the whole thing, the seed and all, to get that full power and benefit from it. And then they have bioflavonoids on the inside of the rind in the white part. Okay? All the best to you. Let's take one more here. John from Central New Jersey. Hi, John.
Hey, Gary.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being so enlightening as always. And quick question. If I'm a brand new vegan turned a couple months ago.
Good for you.
Thanks. And I feel good. The only thing is I'm looking to bulk up because I'm underweight, about 30 pounds, weighing about 130, and my height is about 5'10 or so, 5'11.
Not a problem. Mr. Universe, Mr. Olympia have all been vegetarians, and so you won't have a problem getting the muscle mass. Just do this. Take some creatine monohydrate, 3,000 milligrams prior to workout. After workout, do a resistant workout, and you'll create muscle mass with that. All right?
Okay. As far as the nuts and seeds and all that stuff, that's like how much per day?
Okay.
Amount of protein. You know, I should use it.
Well, you should be having about 60 grams of protein a day. And I would have 20 of that in your morning health shake before and after your workout. And that'll help you. Okay? Yeah, and we're out of time. And I want to thank you all for coming in. And Carrie Lee will come back this afternoon and bring some more comments and questions in. We have a dynamite guest this afternoon and a commentary on Monsanto. And we'll be taking your calls. I'm Gary Nall. Stay tuned for Animal Magnet Pet Radio with Deborah Wolf.
The Gary Nall Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.
My heart is crying. Lonely teardrop. My pillow never dry. Lonely teardrop. Come home. Just say you will, say you will. Say you will. Hey, hey. Just give me another chance.